Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, July 20th, 2011. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Of course, you can call direct if you're on cell phone, 646-652-4620. Send us your comments anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. This evening, folks, we are pleased to have as our guest Andy Sutton. He's a return guest. He is an economist and chief strategist for Sutton Associates in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He's on the line now. We will be discussing economics this evening. So stay tuned, listen in, and ask questions. And please call in. Andy, is that you?
Hi, Joe Cristiano. How you doing?
Fine, Andy. So pleased. I'm so pleased to hear from you once again. I first have to ask you a question. We made several changes to our platform on the sound cards and whatever. Am I coming through pretty loud and clear to you?
Sound loud and clear to me.
Okay, great. You sound loud and clear. And we were having problems with our input. In other words, the people who were calling in. And we had to figure out how to do that without disrupting everything else. Hopefully we'll solve that problem, but you're coming in nice, loud, and clear. Well, this is an interesting day, Andy, wasn't it? Gold started out at like $17 down in the negative, and then wound up like $15 in the positive. One big swing for one day, like 30 points or $30. That was really strange. I was really surprised to see that at the end of the day.
Well, I'm going to tell you that this is a lot of events are driving this right now. And this is something I think we talked about the last time I was on, or maybe the time before that, this whole nonsensical idea that Greece is saved, it's not saved. It's saved, it's not saved. It's on, it's off. You know, and now you take a look at the headlines, and now once again, 24 hours to save Greece. You know, you and I talked, I don't know, 6 months, a year, whatever it was, ago and said when they put the first little Band-Aid on there, this is not going to fix it. They're not even addressing the problem. This is going to keep coming back, and we're going to keep saying it and saying it and saying it until people get it. This is not going away.
Right. You know, I'm a believer in natural events. I particularly appreciate the American Indian a philosophy on many of the tribes where they talk about balance and harmony. In other words, things have to be correct. They have to be right. They have to be one with the cosmos, if you will. And things eventually work out well that way. It seems that, from my perspective, absolutely everything that we are doing is incorrect. It's nothing that I ever studied in economics or finance. And yet, we keep on telling everybody how wonderful everything is, and all we have to do is increase the debt limit, and bingo, everything is fine.
Well, this gets right to the very root of this foul way of economic thinking. And I know you had wanted to hit into these leading economic indicators, and believe it or not, this kind of all ties together. So I don't know. Do you want to start there, or do you want to just take it as it goes, or how do you want to do this tonight?
Leave it up to you. I did have a question on economic indicators because I am a subscriber to the American Institute of Economic Research, have been for about 20 years. They provide excellent articles, and they're not biased. They're not Republican, Democrat, progressive. They try to present the facts just plain as they do, you know, as they are. They do give some commentary sometimes, but it's usually on the side, and you have to sort of interpret it yourself. But the last one, and one that I sent you, had to do with the last economic indicators, the lagging indicators, the leading indicators, the coincidence indicators, and most of them are expanding, albeit anemically, yet jobs and housing are still down in the doldrums. And it seems that those two are preventing all the other indicators from reviving this economy because everything is still incredibly anemic.
Let's go through this because I think there's something to be learned from these situations. I'll give my bias up front. I generally don't pay an awful lot of attention to the leading indicators, and I think when we're done with this, you'll probably understand why.
Okay.
Outside the fact that I like to use them to figure out how accurate they were in forecasting, because that's really what they're supposed to do.
Right.
They're supposed to forecast levels of output via GDP. And unfortunately, that's the best mainstream measurement that we have for measuring output. There's a lot of others. I wrote about one this past month in A Sensible Investor that's quite a bit more honest than GDP. But that aside, I mean, we use GDP, so these things are only good, these leading indicators, if they actually forecast changes in GDP. Here's the thing. Let's go through these line item by line item. And what they do is they have, it's called an index. It's called the LEI, Leading Economic Index. I'll list the components and then their respective weights. The first component is average weekly hours of manufacturing. That's 25.49% of the index. That makes sense. The second one, average weekly initial claims for unemployment insurance. That's 3.07% of the index. The third one, manufacturers, new orders, consumer goods, and materials. That's 7.74% of the index. The next one is index of supplier deliveries, vendor performance. That's 6.77%. Manufacturers, new orders, non-defense capital goods is 1.8%. Building permits, new housing, private units, that's 2.7%. Here, now's where it gets interesting. Stock prices, 500 common stocks. 3.9%. Money supply, M2, 35.8%. Interest rate spread, 10-year treasury bonds less federal funds, that's 9.91%. And the index of consumer expectations is 2.82%. So your big two items in here are in order, money supply at 36% roughly, and average manufacturing hours weekly, and that's about 25.5%. So those are the two big guys in here. Some of these really shouldn't even be in the leading index. Stock prices, there's been many a study done about how stock prices relate to economic growth trends, and generally over longer periods of time, they do because of inflation, but in the shorter run, the 2 to 5 year term, 1 to 2 year term, they really don't. So you could snipe at that a little bit. That's 4%. But the money supply is interesting. And, you know, I wrote to you, Joe, that these indicators have a Keynesian bias to them. And this is where the Keynesian bias comes in. Because M2 is one of those monetary aggregates that generally sees its biggest increases when loans increase
right.
at banks. That's means people, businesses are taking on debt. The conference board, which puts this index out, attaches a huge weight to new debt as economic growth. So if people are going into banks, businesses are going into banks, borrowing money, enhancing their indebtedness, going further into debt, these folks in their index are giving that 36% of the weight on economic growth. So you can see the idea of growth here is predicated on people going further into debt. Now, generally, in a normal economy, that necessarily wouldn't be a big deal. There's always going to be borrowing. Businesses are always going to borrow to expand, hire more workers, open more production lines, and this and that kind of thing. But when you have a society that is as deeply in debt as we are, this becomes a drag on the economy.
Right.
So the leading indicator is really a drag on the economy
right.
through this money supply. And there's a whole bunch of other issues going on with the idea of money supply. I wrote about this about 2 years ago. I will post a link to that article on my blog if anybody wants to take a look at the article, because I think it's relevant. You know, you pointed out, hey, these indicators are going up month after month for the most part, and yet the economy is just stagnating. It's not doing anything. It's piddling along. If it weren't for all the deficit spending that's going on by government, the economy would collapse.
Right.
And
right.
That's the truth. So what are these leading indicators really worth at the end of the day? They've got a Keynesian bias in a huge role with this, with the money supply playing such a big part. And it's the idea of, well, the more money we, you know, the bigger the money supply, the more money that's available, that automatically causes economic growth. I made the argument in my article 2 years ago that instead of using M2, we should be using M2 velocity of circulation.
Okay.
For those of you guys who are in business, that's kind of like using inventory and then going to inventory turnover.
Right.
It's the amount of times a dollar cycles through the economy in a given year.
Right.
The higher that number, obviously, the more output you have, the more transactions are taking place. That portends economic growth. M2 velocity of circulation absolutely collapsed going into 2008. It bounced up a little in the early 2009, and now it's falling again. So I would argue that velocity is a much better indicator in terms of leading economic indicators than just straight M2. The Conference Board doesn't see it that way, and they continue to do it in the current fashion. I'm not sure how political of an organization the Conference Board is, but you know, you take that for what it's worth. Those are the items that are in it. Some of them are very valid, obviously manufacturing hours, those types of things, initial claims for unemployment insurance, that can be a drag if it goes high. Those make a lot of sense. Some of these other items don't make quite as much sense. I would weight consumer expectations a lot higher than 2.82%. But this is what they do. This is what's released every month, and the media grabs it and runs with it. And I just think it's important that people understand what goes into these statistics, what goes into these numbers that they release, because they don't really tell you. What goes into these things, and more importantly, what are the biases, and what are the risks to the assumptions that are made to get those numbers?
Right. Now, each one of those have a certain weight. That they're not equally weighted. So one may be up, which could be meaningless, and the other one could be down slightly, which could be very meaningful. Is that not true?
Absolutely. There was a number of months where the increase in M2 outweighed 9 other negative components.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So the leading index actually went up. I don't have that exact data in front of me. I'd have to skim the article again here that I wrote, but there was the month that I was discussing, or the month prior, somewhere in that near-term period of time, there had been a month where the only positive was M2. Everything else was negative.
Yeah.
But since M2 received such a high weight, it actually pushed the index up.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong. I don't think that's statistically honest. I don't think that's intellectually honest. I think if you have an index that's doing that, then you're either very biased on the Keynesian side saying, well,
right,
we really think that bigger money supply means economic growth, and the debt that goes into making that bigger money supply means more economic growth, or else you've got a bad index and you need to reweight it.
Yeah.
So I don't know which one it is, but in either case, you know, there's some reason for skepticism with that particular set of numbers.
Yeah. Well, it seems that people are being lulled into some sort of feeling of complacency. They know nothing is going right. They know things aren't right. They're not optimistic about the future, but people seem to be hesitant to want to believe that things could go wrong. They would much rather believe that things eventually will go right, and it'll right itself. And I've spoken to financial analysts who call me because of my portfolios and whatever, and I asked them, what is the basis from which you're drawing these conclusions? He said, well, we've been through this before. We've always pulled it out. Now, these are supposed to be, you know, intelligent financial people, you know, and thus we'll do it again. And it seems like the mentality of the average citizen is almost the same way. Well, we know it's bad, but it could never, ever happen to us. And this happens in Greece. It happens in Argentina. It happens in Bolivia. But it cannot happen here. With the United States, you know, and there's full faith and credit in the U.S. dollar, the whole bit. We seem to be fooled into thinking that it cannot happen to us.
You're absolutely right. That is really what the media has pushed over the past few decades. You know, there's going to be, you know, it's always kind of couched in the whole mantra of there being bumps in every road, but our road is towards prosperity and, you know, thump yourself on the chest and go out and spend some more money. I mean, we've had presidents get up and say, you know, this is a recession and things are bad, but take your family to Disneyland. I mean, this is the mentality. And I don't mean to pick on just that individual. These guys all do that.
Right.
That is what is pushed. This is what we economists call management of expectations.
Right.
And that's why I said that should be a much bigger component of that index, because they spend so much time on it. You know, Bernanke having news conferences now after FOMC meetings.
Right.
This has never been done before, but they know. No, first of all, nobody believes a word that comes out of his mouth anyway, but they figure, well, you know, it's so bad, we need to get on there and tell people how that, you know, these people are on the ball and they know what's going on and all this good stuff. So let's get Bernanke out there and, you know, get him an extra can of Barbasol and have him give a press conference, because, you know, we need to pump up these expectations. That, unfortunately, my friend, is what it's all about right now.
Well, you know, when Ron Paul asked him the question, well, if gold is not money, why does the Federal Reserve have a reserve in gold? His answer was, because it's tradition. Now, I think I would have had an aneurysm right then and there, and they would have carried me out. Blood would have been all over the table. I mean, I can't believe that he would say something as ignorant, as flippant as that. Because it absolutely makes no sense, regardless of what your political persuasion is or your financial persuasion is. It makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. I watched that, not live, but on Memorex. Somebody, a client of mine, sent me the video clip and said, you have got to watch this. Make sure you're sitting down. And I heard that exchange, and I give Dr. Paul a lot of credit. I mean, he used his 5 minutes or whatever they give him, and he really went after Bernanke this time. And he had him on the ropes. I mean, Ben would start to answer, and Dr. Paul would be on jumping down his throat with the next question already. I mean, he was just rapid firing him. But that exchange, oh, we just do this for tradition. He should be fired for that right there on the spot.
Yeah, right there.
If he has no idea why he's doing something, now he's in charge, mind you, of the U.S. dollar, its value, unconstitutionally, but he's in charge of the dollar, its value, and he's responsible for maintaining price stability and maximum employment. If he's doing things because of age-old traditions, then he needs to go back to his classroom at Princeton. I don't know the man. I don't like him just based on some of the things he said. I think he lies intellectually at the very least. If he doesn't know that gold is money and gold has been money for thousands of years, then he doesn't even deserve to be a Princeton professor.
Well, he knows that, but then he, like you said, he doesn't tell us what he knows. He tells us what he thinks what politically the people want to hear. Can you imagine storing hundreds of billions of dollars worth of gold just because it's tradition? I mean, it's insane. I mean, every time I think about that, I shake. I just can't handle it. And right then and there, the president should have gotten up the next day and said, Bernanke has been fired. The guy's an idiot. We're replacing him with Andy Sutton. You know, somebody, you know?
Joe, you couldn't pay me to take that job.
But I've come to the point where I understand absolutely nothing. I thought I had a grasp of some of the stuff. I understand absolutely nothing. Am I alone?
No. I mean, this is something you and I have talked about a number of months now, and I know your regular callers, Jim, Adam, some of these other guys that call in regularly. I know right now they're sitting there and they're feeling the same piercing migraine that you and I are over this kind of stuff. Unfortunately, this is what you get when you have a society of people who, by and large, now it's changing a little bit on the periphery, on the margin. It's starting to change. Some people are starting to want to become more aware, and that's great, and we need to encourage that. But when you have this huge intellectual inertia that we have going on right now in this country, that nothing bad can ever happen here, Greece is Greece, and the fact that they borrowed way too much money, it's crushing their country. That will never happen to us because we can borrow and spend however much money we want. We can borrow and spend trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and nobody's ever going to say a word. Nobody's ever going to say, hey, enough's enough. Nobody's ever going to, you know, run on the bank, so to speak, and say, hey, you guys aren't paying us back in these paper tickets anymore. We want something that's worth something. Right. We want land. We want resources. Right. We want gold, right. Whatever. This, the fact that we think that we can just keep doing this ad infinitum and never pay any consequences is just the ignorance involved in that kind of thinking. Joe, it sickens me to the point of expiring.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just, at this point, I just don't know what to do other than to make sure I have a few weeks' worth of food in the house and I can protect my family financially and physically. And that's it. And I said, you know, I must be a nutcake. I mean, sometimes when I think this way, I remember the guy in East Harlem where I used to live, you know, in Harlem, in New York City, you know, the guy, the beard, you know, and the raggedy clothes, and he had the sign, you know, repent, the end is near. You know, I said, I'm him now. I am this guy. All I need is the sign, and then walking up and down the street, because that's where my mind is going. And I said, it's nutty.
Well, you know what, you're not alone. Most of the phone calls and the emails and the people I talk to, especially in the last, I don't know, 6 months to a year for sure, have been saying a lot of the same types of things that you're saying. They're very worried about what's going to happen in 5 years, what's going to happen in 2 years, what's going to happen in 2 weeks.
Right.
People are becoming more frightened of this debt ceiling issue, just for one, just because you've heard a lot of lies that have been spread about what is going to happen if this agreement isn't met. And really, if you give me a second, I want to make a comparison.
Sure.
Between now and what happened back in 2008. Now, I'm not putting on a tinfoil hat for this one. You can go and check this out for yourself. But if you go to YouTube and type in Brad Sherman, he's a California congressman, you can listen to him talk about the threats that were made against congressmen and senators on the floor of the House, on the floor of the Senate, before that TARP bill was voted on, telling them what was going to happen if they didn't vote to pass that bill. Because you remember, they voted no on a Monday, and then they were threatened, they were bullied, the market started acting violently, and by Friday, they turned around and passed the bill. They were threatened. People were told there would be martial law. They were told the economy would collapse. This is right on YouTube. Go check it out. Brad Sherman, martial law. Type it in.
Okay,
they were told all kind of stuff. Senator Inhofe, I believe he's from Nebraska. He was another fellow that made some commentary on some of the things that were said. It was done by members of the United States Treasury Department. Joe, they will do the exact same thing this time around, if necessary, to get what they want. And it wasn't even in 2008 that they were just looking for bailout money. If you remember, the day after they got the vote for their bailout money, they immediately changed the modus operandi of what they were going to do with the bailout money. They just wanted to steal 750 or 787 or however many billions of dollars it was from the American taxpayer and give it to their buddies at the big banks.
Right. Exactly. Paulson, what they did,
used to be the CEO of Goldman Sachs, he goes into the Treasury. He passes or helps to pass legislation, ramrods it really, that is favorable for his former employer. I mean, come on.
You know,
and this is the reason I wanted to talk about that. I think in the next 2 weeks, you're going to see exactly the same thing happen all over again. You will see threats of economic terrorism. The economy is going to collapse. We'll be cut off from Chinese products. will be cut off from Saudi Arabian oil, all this kind of stuff. And all that, I got news for you, all that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, and eventually,
just because of the way we're behaving financially.
Yeah, when we talk about the budget and the debt ceiling, I had occasion to speak to this one gentleman, and I said, well, missing from the equation is that, you know, we spend, what, $1.3 trillion a year or more on unnecessary military action. Just bring everyone home, you know, and you won't have to worry so much about a balanced budget. You know, the guy says, we can't do that. We got to keep our troops in the Middle East to protect our supply of oil. I said, well, that doesn't make any sense. We need our troops to do that. You mean we just can't buy it? He says, no, we have to keep our troops there to guarantee that we get our oil. I said, well, you know, that part of the world, the Middle East, is the oil capital of the world, if you will, and they supply a lot of the oil around the world. I said, but we're the world's breadbasket. I assume now you would be in favor of other countries who buy our corn and our grains, that they bring their troops over here to guarantee their supply. And the guy looked at me.
That went over well.
I mean, didn't know what to say. I mean, he said, no, we can't have them over here. He said, well, if they came over here, we'd nuke them, you know, or something like that. And I said, but this standard, like, this is what we do. No one else is entitled to do it, but we can, and it's all right, you know, and we don't care. So a few million people get killed, you know, that's all in the day's work. I don't think we understand, you know, Andy, I just don't understand anything anymore, and I'm really getting concerned, because if we go down, there is no way right now anyone can try to develop some sort of scenario of what would happen, because it's too catastrophic.
Well, it is. Here's the thing, though. There's no reason that August 2nd has to be the drop-dead date. There is still plenty of maneuvering that the Treasury could do. Maybe another couple months worth, certainly a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
I'd like to know why August 2nd was arbitrarily picked as the drop-dead date.
That's a good
question. I mean, we hit that debt ceiling back on May 16th. That was when we hit it. So that was almost 3 months ago.
Right.
Well, two for sure. Two and change. So why couldn't we squeeze another couple of weeks out of it? Certainly, they could dig in the couch and find a couple billion dollars between the cushions.
Right.
To keep this thing going. They've already stopped contributing to the civil service retirement plan. They've already stopped contributing to the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan for federal employees. They've already stopped doing a bunch of these other kinds of things. They've already stopped contributing to other trust funds that they're legally required. So they're already breaking the law. They are already defaulting. Those are defaults.
Right.
The whole thing of what they've been doing over the last 5 years with this incessant raising of the credit ceiling and more monetary printing and more borrowing and trashing the dollar, that is all a default. There was, you know, Ron Paul was on the floor of the House yesterday, and he said the same thing. Nobody seemed to be interested. We are already defaulting. It's already happening.
Well, Peter Schiff put it, he said, we defaulted back in 1971 when we told people, no, you can't have gold anymore. We're going to give you worthless
paper. Well, sure.
And that's a default. He said,
you know, if you want to get really technical, we defaulted back in 1933 when we suspended redeemability for gold.
That's right.
It's one of these situations where, again, you have a media that works in a 24-hour news cycle. They know nothing about economics. They know nothing about finance. And the few that do know anything about economics had their brains filled with Keynesian rubbish when they went to college or when they went to graduate school, just like I did. I had my brain filled with the same rubbish. Some of us looked at it and said, you know what, this makes absolutely no sense. And when you hammer the professor and get them up against the ropes and their final answer on the issue is, well, that's because that's the way I said it is, then you know you got a problem.
Right. Yeah.
And it's time to look for something else. But this is what you have. You have a bunch of these people running the country that think that the only way you can have economic activity is with monetary printing, stimulus, federal spending, deficits, and debt. and that's how you base an economy. It is not.
And
they're learning that lesson in Europe, and I've got news for anybody, all the deniers and all those other kind of people. We're going to get that here. And it's not me saying it. It's not you saying it. These are simply the laws of economics, and that is what is saying it. Before, I know you got to go to break. Here's a quick aside. A couple of weeks ago, we were supposed to release 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah, right.
It was going to knock the oil prices down. I'm sitting here looking at the oil supplies report from this morning. As of today, now today is what, dear? The 20th of July, as of the 15th, the last reported week, still no release from the SPR. So.
Well, let's we'll leave everyone with that thought.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host for Liberty Talk Radio. We have with us this evening Andy Sutton, economist and chief strategist for Sutton & Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We do welcome everyone's call in, regardless of the type of question. Don't be concerned that it may not be exactly what we're talking about. We're just rambling right now. We're just talking overall. Call with any of your questions or concerns. Toll-free number is 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Please, I mean, do call. You're not interrupting us. You can send us your email anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. All right, Andy, what is your best case scenario of what's going on right now?
Best case? Well, the best case scenario would be, in my opinion, that the Congress folks, the President, they would come up with a plan that would involve no further increases in the debt ceiling, and it would address some of the excesses that we have in our budgetary system. I mean, let's be honest. We study goat racing in Siberia. We don't need to be doing that.
Yeah.
And there's you go on these government waste websites, and they chronicle in sordid detail the myriad programs that we spend money on that just have absolutely no bearing on anything. We start by dumping that stuff and see where that gets us, see how many hundreds of billions we can save there. The second thing that I would suggest we do is simultaneously is go to our biggest creditors and cut a deal with them and say, look, we want to repay you. We don't want to destroy our dollar. We can't pay you in these terms. Kind of do like a reorganization, like a company would do.
Yeah.
That goes bankrupt but doesn't actually just liquidate, one that reorganizes. Try and cut some deals with some of these creditors and maybe get a reduction in the interest rate that's paid or some kind of situation like that where you renegotiate those contracts and see if they'd be willing to. And they don't really even have to talk to us about that, but you know, I would try. Thirdly, we need to find a way to produce more and consume less, especially from overseas, because that is one of the biggest drivers of this debt is our current account. We've run trade deficits for years. And if that means that Walmart doesn't get as much junk for its shelves for a while, then so be it. Sooner or later, we will be able to replace that missing output with factories here domestically. And that'll take years. I mean, you just don't build a factory. It takes time. You know, this has to be a 5 to 10 year plan at a bare minimum, probably a 10 to 15, maybe 20 year plan if you really wanted to do it right. Now, the problem here is, these guys are going to have to ascribe to something like this, and there's many other things that we could do, but I would think those would be some biggies. We are going to demonstrate trustworthiness and creditworthiness by saying enough is enough, no more debt ceiling increases. We won't do it. Timothy Geithner, if you print $1 or borrow $1 more than you're statutory allowed to, you're going to jail.
Right.
And the same goes for the rest of these guys. And the Federal Reserve, you're out of the bond game. You're not allowed to monetize this debt and destroy this currency.
Yeah.
Because that is what is going to annoy the creditors more than anything, is the fact that they're getting paid back in dollars that buy half of what they would have bought 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That will annoy your creditors. That will start a trade war or a currency war or a real war.
Yeah.
You don't do that. So the Federal Reserve, ostensibly, you're out of business. You've done a rotten job. You were given the stewardship of this currency 97, 98 years ago now. It's lost 96% of its purchasing power during your tenure. You're fired for incompetence, gross incompetence, malfeasance, and whatever else we can come up with. You're done. You're history. Maximum employment, you failed there too. You're done.
The Congress would take
its role, its constitutional rollback of coining money and regulating the value thereof. That would come back on the Congress where it belongs.
Right. Oh, boy.
And there would be a lot of pain in all of this.
Tremendous.
People would have to do without some things. There might be some turmoil. People would have to stick together. We couldn't have this me attitude. It would have to be, hey, what can we do to make this work?
Right.
We need a total attitude adjustment, and then we need to go to the world with that attitude adjustment and say, these are the corrective measures that we're going to be taking. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
The world would more than likely support it. And my evidence for that is that anytime some of these countries in Greece have tried to embrace austerity, the general reaction has been good until S&P and Moody's go in there and cut their credit ratings again.
Yeah.
They're actually making that worse. And you got to wonder whose best interest those two firms are acting in. But that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
We need to have a sound package. It can't be malarkey. It can't be like this deal earlier in the year where, oh, well, we saved $38 billion, and then it ended up costing us $380 million or something like that more when it should have been a $38 billion cut. We can't have any more of that.
Right.
There's no more time for that stuff.
Yeah. It has
to be done. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm going to roll now.
Doesn't the government play a game with numbers? They say, well, we've reduced the budget by 15%. But the way they do that, let's say they spent $500 million on something this year. Next year, they increased it to $700 million. Then they reduce it slightly. Now, this is money that they intended spending, the additional money. They reduce the additional money down, and then they say, we cut the budget by 15%. And when they really didn't cut, they actually increased. Is that the game that they play?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like kind of like the same game that they like to play with Social Security and Medicare, and they say, you know, the national debt, that's another joke. They'll say, well, the national debt's $14.23, whatever it is, trillion dollars. That's what's on the books right now. But if you're an accountant and if you had a firm, if this was your company, Joe,
yeah,
and this was your set of books, you would be required to have the net present value of your future liabilities
figured
in there too, right?
Right, absolutely.
Otherwise, you'd go to jail.
Right.
You'd go to jail for you know, falsifying your financial reports. Well, they don't do that. They can get away without doing that. If you actually put in the net present value of the future liabilities and the ones that are unfunded and all of this stuff, you come out with monstrosic numbers. They're huge.
Yeah. Now, are other countries doing the same thing? Are they, we say that a certain country has 110% debt to GDP, are they playing the same accounting game, or does that include everything? Would you know?
Yeah, that's generally the same kind of game we're playing. Most of that fancy accounting is done internationally. So if they're saying 110, you know, it's anybody's guess what it really is. I haven't studied those countries. It's probably a lot higher than that. The interesting thing is the stated debt that's there. When you get to about 13, 14, 15% of GDP, if that's the size of your deficit in a particular year, that seems to be causing problems now.
Okay.
If you're looking at a situation where your total debt to GDP is, you know, 100, 105, 110%, that seems to be the tipping point, at least in the Eurozone, when these countries are starting to get into trouble. I mean, you take a look at Greece right now, because their credit rating has been just mercilessly beaten down by S&P and Moody's. Their two-year notes, the last time I looked, are paying 35% interest.
Jeez, unbelievable.
On a two-year note.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
You look at,
they're going to go bankrupt just
then you look at our government, and every 6 weeks or so, Moody's or S&P or sometimes Fitch gets into it, and they will say, well, you know, if the U.S. government doesn't get their fiscal situation together, we're going to have to think about cutting their credit rating.
Right.
And then 6 weeks later, it comes out again, and then it comes out again.
Right.
Oh, now we've put them on downgrade watch. I mean, this is just hysterical. You're talking like little elephant, baby elephants, little babies, you know, in Greece and Ireland and Spain and these other countries. They're nothing, and we're the big mama, and nobody wants to mess with the big mama right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry to make light of this, but it's humorous, and if you don't think about how serious it is, you know, and sometimes I have to just laugh at it.
Yeah. We have a call. We have a couple of calls. One is just holding on, I think, listening. But I believe one, if we have a new panel here, I wish I understood all of it. Let's see if this caller has a question. Caller, area code 610, you're on the air. Did you have a question?
No, not exactly a question. Wanted to say hi to Andy. Andy, it's Monty.
Monty, how are you? I know that voice.
I'm doing all right. I'll come up with a question eventually, Joe. Good evening, Joe, too.
Oh, thank you. Good evening,
too. I feel bad for both of you. Nobody called in so far. I've listened to the whole show, and I've heard a couple other ones, and I thought I should call in and give you two guys some support.
Thank you.
we appreciate it.
I hear what you're talking about. I've been concerned about this debt business, too, for many years, as Andy knows. I'll quickly share that from what I've been hearing the last couple of days, they're going to raise it anyway. And Andy's analogy of the way the sow spilled milk is spill some more milk really holds true. But I don't have a particular question, but another comment, though, if you have a little time.
Sure. Surely.
Am I still there?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Andy, when you talk, You're above my head a little bit sometimes. You're extremely knowledgeable on the economics part, on the indicators and the things like that. And there's many people that are, and you know I'm at a little different level than that. Even though I kind of understand it, it makes me wonder how the average listener to Joe's show understands that. I even wonder sometimes how much Joe understands that. Joe, for background... for background, I'm the one that Andy turns to when he wants to really know what's going to come down the road. Okay,
okay, great.
He has the knowledge, but I have a little age on him. And,
May I ask, how old are you?
Hey, we all need our sounding boards.
Yeah. How old are you, Monty? Can I ask? How old are you, Monty?
I have a hard time hearing Joe at this point.
Oh,
but,
can you hear me
but
now?
I can hear Andy.
Can you hear me now, Monty?
Yeah.
Oh, how old, may I ask?
That's a commercial, isn't it?
How old are you?
How old am I? Well, it's good I'm not a woman because you're not supposed to ask that. I'm 57.
67?
57.
Oh,
57. Oh, I know you're older.
You're an old man.
By your picture, you look older anyway.
You're young. You're kidding. Don't say you're old. You're young. Let me ask you a question, Monty.
Go ahead. That's what I wanted.
What is your opinion of this? You know, we seem to be diverted, our attention is diverted to the debt limit. Shouldn't our attention be diverted to the people who have been in office all these years knowing that this was going to happen and did nothing and all of them should be fired?
I'll answer that. I'll comment first by saying Andy doesn't like to pull politics into the economics very often. He tries to avoid that. I, on the other hand, have no problem with it. Getting rid of the people that are making these mistakes would be a tremendous chore. Okay, and as what you talked about tonight already, they're going to buckle down and give in anyway in the next week or two.
Yeah.
For no good reason. It's fear. It's just fear-mongering. Did I answer your question, or do I?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that we're giving everyone who's responsible for this irresponsibility a pass, and we divert the attention of the voters from the people who are responsible for giving it a pass and being irresponsible to Republican versus Democrat and on certain issues. In other words, it's all a diversion to make sure that we don't concentrate our thoughts on who is to blame in the first place. And I just wanted your opinion of that.
I find it's not enough people know what the cause of all this problem is. We cannot convince people that the cause of all these economic problems, everybody wants to say, well, it was the housing problem in 2006, okay? Well, no, the problem started 50, 80 years ago when we started borrowing money that we shouldn't have been borrowing, right, when we started spending more in a year than we take in. And the people don't recognize the cause.
Right.
You can't fix a problem until you know the cause. And I email my legislators and blah, 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 and all that and everything else. But nobody really seems to get that. But, yeah, sure. The only people that have the ability, the knowledge, the understanding to know the cause and to know the fix are the ones that haven't been elected yet. It seems like once you get elected, then you, how should I say, get infected.
Well, yeah, Ron Paul argues that this all the time, and every time he's referred to in the mainstream media, he's always sort of downgraded from a human to a subhuman. Every single time, they never give him the respect that he deserves. He says, well, you know, he's sort of on the they call him a fringe senator, someone with ideas that go too far. I mean, all these stupid comments to discredit him because he's the only one who's saying, hey, you got us in this mess, now get us out of it. And no one wants to know that. That's my point.
Yeah, and the mess is so old. You know, you can't blame one person anymore at this point. This has just been happening and happening and happening. But the feeling on this, you know, my mind, I'm voting, there's no way I increase at that limit. Because the result's going to be the same either way. Andy said that earlier tonight.
Right.
But I think the quicker you stop borrowing money, the sooner the agony will start and the shorter it will be and the less it won't be near as bad if we start the process now.
Right.
This is absolutely tough. We're not borrowing money anymore.
Right.
I know what the one comment I wanted to make, though.
Sure.
Okay. Andy said he wouldn't take he couldn't be paid to take Bernanke's job, right? But how about Geithner's? Okay? He's quitting, right?
You can pay me to take his job.
Think about it. Andy, I have faith in you. I have faith in me. There are millions of Americans that sit down at their kitchen table, maybe once a month, maybe every other week, maybe every 2 months, and they have $300, no, I'll say $3,000. $3,000 worth of bills laying there, and they have $2,000 to pay it with. And we Americans, Andy Sutton, Joe Cristiano, Monty Schrader, we can sit down and decide, well, I have to pay that one. That one I can't. I don't have enough for that one. They'll wait. This one's stupid. I'm not going to pay that one. We can decide how to spend our money because we have learned we got to make it reach.
Right.
Geithner doesn't have the wherewithal, the gonads, whatever you want to say, to even attempt that. Maybe he doesn't have the authority either. Okay.
He's never worked a real day in his life either. He probably doesn't know what an unnecessary invoice looks like.
Right. He has a whole crew of people that are doing that. He's following the rules, so to speak. But no, Andy Sutton, Treasury Secretary, I don't know. You know, if you could sit down and say, well, we're going to pay Social Security, but we're not writing any checks anymore to state governments. We're not writing any checks to school districts. We're not writing any checks to pay for fuel for state park, whatever. You know, you'd look at the checks that they wanted to get sent out that day, and you could say, nope, not this one, not this one, not this one, because we're only getting $170 billion in next month, and there's bills laying here for $300 million. Billion, rather.
Yeah. What do you think's going to happen?
Monty, wouldn't be a bad job for you, but
Monty, what's going to happen?
It'd be stressful.
What's going to happen in your opinion, Monty?
They're going to roll over. They're going to roll over and borrow more money.
What's going to happen to the economy?
What's
going to happen to the economy
next year?
Oh,
to the economy. It's just going to get worse. We'll have Andy's been saying hyperinflation for 5 years now. I've been waiting for it. I just went and bought fuel oil the other last week and paid for it on Monday, so that when it goes to $24 a gallon, you know that I got a good deal.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I'm waiting for this hyperinflation yet, Andy.
Now, but you know, unfortunately, that kind of a thing is very hard to time.
It's very what?
It's very difficult to put a timeline on.
Oh, yeah, I understand. So people are telling me I have to finish my book before it's too late. So I'm down to the last four chapters. So
and see what happens. What is your book on?
But your question, Joe, what do I think is going to happen? I think they're going to pass, they're going to borrow more money, and things are just going to get worse.
No, I asked you, what
Republicans will roll over. And,
what is your, you said you're writing a book. What's the nature of your book?
What we do when the collapse happens.
Oh, okay. All righty. Okay.
It's pretty good, Joe. You should get a copy of it. I read the first, I don't know, 14 chapters or so.
Yeah, I think I'm writing chapter 28 right now.
Oh,
30,
you're way.
You
got to send me those chapters. I want to catch up.
Okay, so you're writing.
I stopped blogging it. I tried to blog another bit, and I couldn't get it on. But
so you're writing.
I can email you sometime too and catch up a little bit on things. But,
yeah, do that.
I just wanted to call a show and give a little bit of third voice in tonight, and I'll get off and let somebody else call. Hopefully.
Okay, Monty. Thank you so much for calling. Certainly appreciate it. Monty. I'll tell you this: if you'll send me an email with a mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd be more than pleased to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt. Okay?
I might, but it's not necessary. We
okay.
have enough bills to
yeah,
pay,
if you,
you included.
Okay. Well, if you want to, just send it to comments@libertytalkradio.com, and I'll be more than happy to mail it to you, okay?
Anytime. I have it on the screen right now.
Right.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you another time,
right.
Andy.
Thank you. Right.
Okay, talk to you later, buddy. Take it easy.
So long. Bye.
Well, that was interesting. It's nice that someone called. I am, again, very disappointed that we haven't had more callers. I don't
I'm going to tell you something. What I did this afternoon, I don't know if you got that email from me.
I threw
a stick and a carrot out there to my entire list to get people to call in, because I always get them, and they always email in and say, hey, that was a great show. We really enjoyed you guys.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone. Ask us something.
Well, you know, I ask people, I said, you know, sometimes I ask friends, I said, why don't you just call in? Because it makes it more meaningful when people do call in. And they say, oh, yeah, and they never do. I said, all right, dude, well, wait till you ask me for a favor.
Exactly.
I don't know why. Now, sometimes they do call in, or they do listen in, but they say, well, I didn't want to interrupt. You know, Andy was on a roll or something like that. And I said, you know, it's not the point. Just call in, you know. Anyway, so, Andy, we're approaching the witching hour, and give us some... words of wisdom before we get off the air, okay?
Words of wisdom. I would say that at this point in the ball game, I think I agree with Monty that they will wait till the last minute, and they may go through posturing, and there may even be some threatening done, as we talked about earlier tonight, a la 2008. But I think ultimately they're gonna raise it, and it's probably gonna be a big raise. And I think they'll do a big raise, because then they'll feel like they won't have to do it again. And it'll probably be timed so that it happens mid-cycle in the election, so it won't be an election issue the next time they have to raise it. That would be my guess, if I was to guess anything. When that'll come, I don't know. I'm guessing probably last minute.
Okay.
If I was putting a large Big Mac and an order of fries on it, I'd say they'll do it at the last minute.
Yeah,
kind of like along
the
lines
of
what Monty said.
And then everyone will give each other credit for it. We do have another caller. Let's see if we can get this caller in line. Caller, you're on
the air. Hey, bring him on.
Area code 816. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Lynn. I'm actually calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Lynn,
I just never bothered to change.
Lynn, I want to let you know
wanted just to say hello and how informative the program's been. I don't have a question.
Oh, okay.
But it's certainly been an informative program.
Okay, thank you so much.
I appreciate
you
that.
One caller, so I'm calling and saying, hey, guys, you're doing a great job of explaining things, and certainly a timely topic.
Well, Lynn, I'll tell you...
For somebody who's been following all this for 50 years.
Lynn, I'll give you...
nothing new.
I'll make you the same offer I just made. Monty, if you'll send me a... to comments at Liberty Talk Radio, a mailing address, and your T-shirt size, I'll be more than pleased to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt for calling in this evening. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. Good night.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that was nice. We had someone calling in to say they called in, and that's great. And that's great. All right. From San Antonio, Texas. Okay. We have about, how many. We have about 3 more minutes to go. I don't know what other subject to pick up on right now, other than I think that the world is confused, as I am. We don't know what's going to happen. We do know what we hear is inconsistent with what is going on, and the solutions are not solving any problems. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I think my best advice for people would be, at this point, pay attention to your own backyard. Do the things that you feel follow common sense and are prudent. Try and stay away from the media. They really don't have an interest in helping you. They work for mutual fund companies, big banks, and this type of thing. They're not really there to serve you. So take that with a grain of salt. And I would say, you know, if something makes sense to you, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck, well, then it's probably a duck and you might want to treat it like one. So prepare to the extent that you feel the need to prepare. I would continue to recommend that people consider making allocations into precious metals. They've got now an 11-year win streak that's going on, and if this, you know, bunch of shenanigans that have been going on recently keep going on, that winning streak will be solidified even further into the future. I do want to counsel people, though, that that's not a way to get rich quick. It's a way to cover your purchasing power and make sure you don't lose it. So it's not one of those things like, well, it's a stock and I made 40%. Now, if you're making 40% in gold over the long run, that means your cost of living has gone up by a similar amount.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, you have to look at it a little bit differently. It's currency. Gold is cash. It's money. People will call it an investment. I don't. I think it's just another form of fungible cash. So, that's the best I can tell you. Do what makes sense to you. Get informed. Get educated. If the need for more information, you can certainly come to us. I think we've got a good track record now of providing sound financial advice, economic advice to people. Check us out. You know, you can read, I've got 5-6 years worth of commentaries there that people can take a look at and see if it makes sense to you. If it does, give me a call. If it doesn't, well, that's good too. Go find somebody that does make sense to you and go that way.
Right.
That's what we can do. We can offer the information, and it'll resonate with certain people. Others, it won't.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I think we can do. Try to find out as much as we can, and then act within our means. Act accordingly. Act smartly, but act prudently.
Right. Okay, and yeah, time's almost up. I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. Will you accept our invitation to return the third weekend, the third Wednesday of next month?
Joe, I'll accept right now on the spot. I can't wait. It's always a pleasure coming on Liberty Talk Radio and speaking with you in this audience.
All right. Thank you so much, Andy. Appreciate it very much. And good night.
All right, Joe. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Well, Andy certainly is a knowledgeable fellow. I think I understand most of what he says. Sometimes I get a little lost like everybody else. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Tech Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.